It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Addiction to opioids is being called a national epidemic, and by all accounts, it's a man-made one. If people are feeling they shouldn't have to tolerate pain, exactly how do you dial that back? Law enforcement and health service agencies have been working to combat the problem. Now, the University of Pittsburgh School of Health Sciences is responding to this crisis. Joining us in studio to explain how they're doing this is Dr. Donald Burke, Dean of the Pitt Graduate School of Public Health. Dr. Burke, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good to be here, Paul.
And also with us is David Hickton, United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania, to talk about how the Justice Department is partnering with academia and public health. David Hickton, good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Paul.
Our phones are down today, so you can join the conversation with an email question or comment at esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Don Burke, as Dean of the Pitt Graduate School of Public Health, you've presented extensive data on the dramatic rise in overdose deaths, both nationally and in Western Pennsylvania in recent years. What does the data tell us?
Right. Particularly over the last 15 years, there has been a dramatic increase in the number of deaths from opioids, both prescription opioids and illegal drugs like heroin, the epidemic isn't just striking persons that are young people. It's striking people that are in middle age, even some older people, that the number of deaths in whites and blacks and other races is essentially the same attack rate. Everyone is involved. Some places in the country are worse than others, that particularly through Appalachia, extending up into our area, areas of the Southwest, areas of around in Oklahoma, there are a number of hot spots. But it's a nationwide problem, and it's affecting almost every major demographic group.
So now that you have this data in front of you, explain the methodology here, how you're going to go about helping officials to understand this data and to act on it.
Right. So the first problem is pulling together the different sources of data. And unfortunately, they're kept in different places. So there are data from the death records. There's data from the hospital records. There's data from human services, from the legal services, and they're not all in one place. So the first step is to pull these together in a way that you can get a feeling for how many persons are using the opioids, how many of those persons are going on to have problems of dependence, of those, how many go on to switch to heroin, of those, how many overdose, how many treatment slots are available. These are not easy pieces of data to get and put all together. So the first thing we're trying to do is help pull all the data together to get a consistent picture that allows us to understand sort of the moving parts of the epidemic.
And you say you're trying to get a handle on every overdose, every death. That's a formidable task, it sounds like.
It is, and there are some sources for that information. Probably the one that's most standard is the death records across the country. They tend not to be reported that quickly through the death record system, but there are other mechanisms, either through the medical examiner or through the law enforcement agencies themselves. So it is a complicated process of getting the data. But when someone dies, people notice, and it gets looked into.
David Hickton, you came to a conclusion about this, that if we ever want to solve this problem, we have to marry public health and public safety. Explain this.
Well, actually, my first awareness about the use of a public health platform to solve problems in my world came through being a customer or listener of this station. I think you do great work here, and it's very thoughtful and visionary. And I first heard a segment about using public health to approach the problem of community violence. And it set me about to think whether we were too narrow in our approach to problems. And about 4 years ago, when we started to deal with the heroin opioid problem here, we did a prescription pill summit in Washington County. And I learned that it was oversubscribed literally in 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And we had a fourfold increase in deaths. And it just struck me that we were being too narrow in how we approached the problem by doing historical law enforcement and approaching the problem after someone had overdosed or died. and that we had to get current with the problem. And through that work and later, I was introduced to Don Burke by former Chancellor Mark Nordenberg when we were doing our work in the National Heroin Task Force and learned the great work they're doing over there and how we have this technology and science available to us now that we can do real-time current interventions. And so that if we can create productive intervention points earlier up the timeline, we can actually catch up to this epidemic as opposed to chase it.
So it's about attacking the problem at the source. And it sounds like what we're all coming to a consensus on here is that it stems from the healthcare field, that for whatever reason, we got to a point where doctors are over-prescribing painkillers, and a lot of it may be coming from the patients, the best word I can think of is bullying their healthcare provider, their doctor, into providing more painkiller because they are not able to tolerate the pain that they're dealing with. Have we gotten to a point in the United States where there's a sense of entitlement about, I shouldn't have to feel any pain, and if you're not going to prescribe it to me, or if my prescription runs out, or it becomes too expensive to buy the opioid painkiller, I'm going to go out into the streets and buy the heroin. Is that what's going on?
Well, I mean, I think everybody has a part in how we got to where we are. I mean, the drug companies are making money off supplying these pills, which on their best day are helpful as reducing, you know, the barbaric circumstance of being in constant pain. Or on their worst case, they're no different than the poison that is being supplied by heartless drug dealers. Doctors are in a position where they've been put into the position where the pain has become a diagnostic condition, and they are rated by their patients. And patients do believe, because of some of the marking that they have received, that they are entitled to be free from all physical and emotional pain, which is certainly not how I was raised or how I live. I think being in pain is part of the human condition, and you don't expect that you can take a pill for everything. But we have such a proliferate amount of pills in the community now. I heard a data point one time, and I'm sure it's somewhere close to being true, that there was literally an opioid prescription let in the last year recorded for every single American in the country. And we have 5% of the world's population. We consume 99% of these pills. And that's just a recipe for disaster. And then one last point is that if you get addicted, which really comes by way of your DNA, because, Paul, you could take it, I could take it, we'll have a different outcome. And you shouldn't look down on people who get addicted because they don't choose to be addicted. It's really in their DNA. Well, you know, you're basically on the path to hell for a $200 a day habit, a dollar a milligram. And if you get addicted, that's what it's going to cost you. And these heartless drug dealers we deal with, principally in Mexico right now, are smart. And they're studying our prescribing patterns. And they pick places like Western Pennsylvania because we happen to have a lot of pills being let here. And they know that a person who has a $200 a day habit can reduce that to about $50 a day if they convert to street heroin. And further, we know that some of these drug dealers are passing out heroin for free around rehab centers. I mean, this is a business at every level.
Passing it out for free on the presumption that they'll become hooked and then they're going to have to start paying right. for it.
Yes. Right. Yes. I mean, this is the business of supplying both illegal drugs and legal drugs.
And you know, certainly we as individuals, and it's very important that what you just pointed out, David, about you know, what's in our DNA, and we're going to react differently to different drugs, and you know, some people become addicted through no fault of their own. That having been said, and I don't mean to put too much of this on the people in the health profession, because you're there to sympathize with the patient and to help them, and you know, being sympathetic is part of that and may lead you to overprescribe something. So how do you equip, Don Burke, how do you equip these students to deal with the real-world scenarios where patients are going to push doctors into prescribing painkillers when it might not be appropriate? Mm-hmm. And it's hard for the doctor to say no sometimes.
Right. As Dave says, the amount of prescribing that's already taking place in the United States is the greatest in the world. And if you compare the United States to a number of the other wealthy countries around the world, on average, we use about four times more opioids than they do. So some other countries have half, but on average, the rich countries in Europe use a lot less. So we could probably get by and be compassionate physicians with using maybe as little as 20% of the current amount that we're using, or even less. So what do you do with somebody that's in pain? Well, there's some types of pain. A person that has terminal cancer, or a person who has a terrible injuries. Those persons, I think you're going to do everything you can to treat their pain, because and frankly not worry too much about addiction, particularly in a late disease that where they may be dying shortly. But there are a lot of other ways to treat pain, and there's been more emphasis lately on the use of the non-opioid prescriptions for pain relief, for exercise, ways of using mental health, of treating depression, of lots of things that can be done to reduce the requirement for opioids. It's tough when somebody's already on the opioids, but when you've got somebody who's just starting, there are a lot of smart things you can do to make sure they don't get addicted. So the CDC just came out last month with 12 suggestions for doctors about how to be more careful about the use of opioids. And there are sensible things like start with lower doses, don't use continuous time release, monitor the patients, don't double up on drugs, check the prescription drug monitoring program. They're just all things that not everybody does, but it was good to see it all put in one place.
Are these the talking points that you're giving to your students?
Yeah, these are exactly the talking points about how to be, if you're going to use opioids, how to be sensible about it. And more, and probably even more important, are there things that you can do before turning to opioids?
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Dr. Donald Burke, Dean of the Pitt Graduate School of Public Health, and David Hickton, United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania, about how to deal with the problem of opioid abuse and opioid addiction, which has reached epidemic proportions in the United States. David Hickton, what are the short-term, medium-term, and long-term deliverables here on this collaboration between between the Justice Department and entities like the Pitt School of Public Health?
Well, within this terrible problem, we have some good opportunities because of the resources we have here in Western Pennsylvania, and there's nobody better than Don Burke. We have gone right away to trying training doctors. So I spoke as a graduation speaker for his class, and in almost the same week, I spoke to all of, through Art Levine, I spoke to all of the graduating students to make them aware of this problem, because there's been a lack of training and education and awareness about it. So that would be an example of one of the many things we're doing in the short term. In the medium term, your listeners would be surprised that we just don't have enough data for either me to do my job or Don to do his job. So we created in the law enforcement realm this fusion center. So in the 25 counties that I represent, we're now getting data. We can't really start to solve the problem unless we know about every overdose. Now, every overdose might not be a criminal case, but we have a fusion center in Cranberry. We're getting a lot of cooperation on this, and we're chasing every overdose. First principles are to stop the deaths. And then the next step would be to reduce the overdoses. I don't think we're ever going to reduce them down to zero, so we have to set our mark realistically. But as Don said, there are things we can do in the medium term that could make a very, very meaningful difference right now. And then in the long term, I think there's research opportunities. You know, I met Don after Mark Nordenberg put us together, and 2 days later I had him at the White House because the process by which he would analyze a measles outbreak here in Western Pennsylvania could be used right now to deal with this epidemic, but we still don't have the right intervention strategies and intervention solutions because we have a treatment deficit here. We don't have enough capacity in treatment. I mean, I'd love to see a public-private partnership to increase capacity for treatment. You know, we have a lot of buildings here in Western Pennsylvania that could be gentrified. We could create a treatment mecca here. We could lead the country, lead the world in dealing with this problem. I also have some sort of pie-in-the-sky ideas, like to do something like they did in Gloucester, Massachusetts, where they really beat me to the punch on something I think I had the first idea on, is some sort of amnesty program, where we bring people together and say, look,
That's right, a great idea.
Right now, we're going to bring you in. You're walking through the raindrops of a potential criminal problem. We're going to offer you the opportunity to cross the street and get help. But if you don't, we're going to prosecute with all of our might. And a condition of getting that help would be we want some information. We want to know who the dealers are. And we're going to clean up Western Pennsylvania in a real and meaningful way, as opposed to playing this sort of whack-a-mole that we play right now, where we tamp down a part of the problem and it pops up elsewhere. We can do this. We can do this here. And there's great, great prospects that Don knows more about than I do about precision medicine, which is on the future, and harvesting all of the wonderful science we've gotten out of the investment we've made collectively in the human genome, which is basically the earthly space shot, moonshot that we did previously. And Dr. Francis Collins at the National Institutes of Health has done some fabulous work. And in, you know, 5-10 years, we're going to have precision medicine. So you and I will get different pills, and research will give us better pills.
So it won't just be one type of medication fits all.
Yeah, it's not all gloom and doom. But a big piece of our work, surprisingly, is getting the data so Don can do his business and putting this problem out of the shadows by reducing shame and stigma. And we are now reporting overdose deaths in a way that is very alarming. A piece of that is we're finally getting accurate information. The problem is much worse, but we're finally getting good baseline information.
Well, and so much of the self-medication is done in secret. People are, men and women are hiding it from their own families. Right. They don't know. Right. Until a lot of times it's too late. So how much of this, in the last minute or so that we have here, how much of this relies on patient responsibility? And, you know, if somebody feels themselves sliding out of control. We did a show before where we had a woman talk about how she felt herself becoming addicted, and she stopped using the medication she was relying on to deal with her pain. Now, not everybody has the strength to do that, but pretty much everybody can communicate that they're having a problem, right? So, right. So how do we encourage people to come out of the shadows and say, you know, I'm, you know, self-medicating. I'm sticking a needle in my arm at night. My own family doesn't even know it, and I'm worried about where I'm headed.
So, I think Dave is right that. That for a long time it's been regarded as a problem of a crime, and to view it as an illness, to view it as a disease, is an important first step. And when a society views this as a person who doesn't want to be an addict and it is a disease, then that we can make available the treatments, we can make sure that the counseling's available, that the person gets into the combination of medical assisted therapies. So that they have a chance of escaping the life of addiction. So this idea that it's a health model, working with law enforcement, I think is the right way to approach it.
Dr. Donald Burke is Dean of the Pitt Graduate School of Public Health, and David Hickton, United States Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today.
Good. Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, we'll look at the new approach judges in Westmoreland County are trying to address drug abuse in their community, focusing on rehab rather than jail time. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.